Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit, like just to kick it off, about your general practice of what I would call, from my friend Sean Wang, learning in public.
Yeah.
You seem to like really just kind of embrace this idea that, hey, I'm learning stuff and doing things and I'm going to share it with you. And I was wondering, is that like an intentional approach that you've taken?
Yeah, that's definitely an intentional approach. I feel like I've been learning for a very long time and I'm not going to stop learning anytime soon. And when I put out more content as I'm learning or things that I've already learned, I can go back and I can find them later. Or people who are hitting similar problems who maybe haven't had the context, time to develop the context that I have, can look at it and go, okay, well, he did this. I watched him do this. I saw him do this. Yeah, maybe he screwed it up a couple of times, but I also screwed it up a couple of times and that helped me. So yeah, it's very intentional.
And taking it like even to the next extreme where you're literally live streaming your development process and your learning process. I was wondering, like, how has that experience been, you know, just broadcasting as a programmer?
That's been a lot of fun. You know, I don't expect it to ever get to the point of some of these video game streamers, right, where I have tens of hundreds of thousands of people watching me at any time. But it's really nice to be able to sort of develop something. Say I'm working on like Gatsby themes or something like that, right? Or MDX or Gatsby MDX or something like that. People use these projects all the time. And it's sort of hard to formulate if you've never built and distributed an open source project, like how this happens. And it's really easy to build up this mental model of sort of open source maintainers as these like infallible, super genius people, just because they have a bunch of repos that are open source and distributed and like a bunch of people are using them, right? But really, everybody sort of starts from the same place and we all learn sort of what we're doing as we're going. And most open source projects that I know of are sort of somebody starts building it and they're not really sure if it'll work out. And then, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you sort of have to deal with that when you're doing it. And exposing that process online is really interesting because I've found that people really appreciate sort of the transparency. And it gives them sort of more of a idea of community about the project.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. And honestly, I was like, when I first started watching people doing it for video games, I was surprised too. And then I spent a couple months just like in wrapped every evening watching Moon Moon play Overwatch, because like I can't play Overwatch competitively. I have a hand injury. But watching him was like 80% of like the feeling of playing Overwatch, and it's really been interesting to me, just the like the immediacy you get when you are connecting that way, right? Like we have this ability to live stream and connect that way, and it's kind of amazing.
It is pretty amazing, and it sort of delivers on that promise of like, I know GitHub's slogan was sort of like social coding at some point, right? But when you're live streaming, it like really is social coding. It's like a group of people working on a project at the same time, even though I'm sort of driving, right? It's almost like mob programming or like extended pair programming in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you done that as a practice, like pair programming in any of your professional capacity?
I don't usually do it in professional capacity when I am either consulting or as an employee. I do it more informally in terms of like, we'll have a junior person or a more senior person and they'll be having a trouble with something that I know about, or I'll be having trouble with something that they know about. And then we'll sort of sit around a computer or do a video hangout or something like that and walk through it, but never really as an official structured, hey, here's the pair programming computer, go over and sit over there and do pair programming now.
Yeah, I haven't really had the opportunity either. I don't know. I've only worked remote for the past decade, and over that time, you know, it's like we build up the patterns and practices of being a remote worker, and communication and over communication is like a huge part of that. So to me, it's an extension of this idea of remote work. We can work anywhere, but we can still work together.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely see that. So I've been doing remote and on-site for over the past 10 years or so, and you see it interestingly in like the way that you talk to people. Because you'll type something out, you'll send it, and you'll look at it, and you'll go, wow, that could be read like I'm attacking you.
Yeah.
So then you'll just do it like a quick check-in, and then they'll go, oh, no, I didn't read it like that, and then we'll continue the conversation.
Yeah. Like the tone, and just like I didn't even embrace video chat until the last couple of years. And I think that's because it was kind of crappy, but like it seems like the tools are catching up, and now, you know, like the ability to, you know, broadband's where it's at, and we are able to push video over the internet at a reasonable speed and like actually have conversations without like stuttering and weird artifacts and that sort of thing that makes it miserable.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think the habits that I pick up with remote work and sort of checking in with people as you're talking to them really apply to in-person conversations as well. It's just that nobody really ever is forced to pick up on them. So unless you've done the work and figured that out yourself, people usually don't have conversations where they're constantly checking in with people.
Yeah. When I'm doing this, and I've started doing the live broadcasting internally to like the Egghead member audience, and it was something I was hesitant to do because it was like, will people even be interested in this? Would they want to watch this? Is this boring? We're literally watching Egghead videos like as a group and then chatting about them. I'm like, would people even want to do that? Like, why would anybody have any interest in that? And as it turns out, the response has been fantastic. Like, people do want to sit down and watch videos with other people and then chat about them afterwards. And, all of this is kind of an extension of that. And, the idea of community and bringing people together and like having a shared experience and learning as we go.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've been pretty heavy into Gatsby and that ecosystem for quite some time. I think I would it would be fair to say you were a very early adopter of Gatsby. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely. I was using Gatsby pre 1.0. I think I came in and started committing around 0.7 or something like that. But yeah, it's been a while.
And this is before they had the there was no GraphQL at that point. This was kind of like early days of Gatsby. And right. You've seen it, like you've been there like pretty much since the beginning, watching it grow. And, where do you see Gatsby fitting into the internet and publishing on the internet now? And where do you see it going in the next year or two?
Yeah, so right now it's fitting in very well with anybody who's using sort of these modern frameworks like React that are component-based and things like that. And you want to sort of like get away from the monolithic WordPress CMS installation. And I mean, WordPress has plenty of security issues and things like that, that we don't really need to get into. But so Gatsby fits really well in sort of this field where you've got this content mesh somewhere, right? Your WordPresses, your Contentfuls, your Sanity IOs, et cetera. Or just local unstructured data, and you need to pull all of that data together and build a site based on that. So you see people doing things like building entire sites based on their Airtable Excel sheets, right? So it fits really, really well. If you have data and you need to do something with that data and render a site out, that transformation pipeline is Gatsby's real core strength right now. As for where it can be sort of in the future, I think it has a very strong chance to sort of replace a lot of the internet. All the people that are currently running things like WordPress, I think Gatsby has a shot at actually replacing a lot of those sites with sort of simpler, more modular sites for people. And that's part of the work that I'm doing with sort of Gatsby themes and things like that, making it easier for people to use Gatsby to build things when you only know HTML and CSS, or when you only know a piece of GraphQL and you don't really know how to build a GraphQL server, but you can like fetch your data.
Yeah. Is it pure content sites, or are people having luck like building more like the dynamic sites, right? Like we bring it in, we use the content mesh, which I was kind of curious about. That's just like the everywhere we can possibly pull our content from is our content mesh, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we want to bring that in. So, Gatsby is a what we would refer to as a static site generator, but then it just becomes a React app at the end of the day, right? Like, so when it's all said and done at build time, we're building the static site, then it takes over as a React app, so we can build any sort of kind of dynamic capabilities that we want into it at that point, I would assume. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Gatsby does the full pre-render, so it renders out HTML for you, right? So you actually have your static site, and it doesn't need to run anything else, right? Yeah. But then you also get this very modern React app to bootstrap on the other side, and it's code split and everything like that. And you've got these progressive web app features. So really what I refer to Gatsby as is sort of a progressive web app generator, not really a static site generator.
That's a good way to put it.
Because you get the static site aspect of it, which can replace Hugo and things like that. But you also get the very dynamic nature of it, in which case you can like throw in Apollo client and start actually building a web app, right? It can be a replacement for Create React app that actually has pre-rendering on one side and a full dynamic app on the other side.
Do you think we'll ever get to the point where like Gatsby isn't React? Do people do that? Do they use it to generate other like Vue, for instance? Can you use it for that now, or is it strictly React at this point?
It's strictly React right now. There's been a couple issues filed, things like that, about potentially building Vue support in and things like that. It's not something that I know anybody is taking an action on right now.
Yeah.
But I could see it happening in the future, right? All the infrastructure underlying Gatsby doesn't necessarily prevent you from doing that. It's just that it was originally built on React and, you know, it's working out really well.
It's a pretty good bet, I think, at this point. And, you know, React is what it is, and it's kind of dominating the space.
Yeah.
So it's the easy choice if you want to use Gatsby. And I know that the other you know, tools out there are, you know, there's tools out there for doing these same type of things with other frameworks. Mm-hmm. But Gatsby, like, to me, has been interesting just because of, as a business, right? Like, Gatsby is a business. It's a funded startup company. Yeah. Right? Like, and so what are they going to do? And like from the business strategy angle of it. And like, I would love to see somebody just completely, you know, WordPress was great and they've had their time, but you know, if they don't, I think embracing this idea of a PWA generator is really going to hit pretty big, as history will tell us, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, you even see WordPress moving in this direction, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
They have an API now. They have their new content editor and things like that. This is the way the world is moving, and Gatsby, I think, got there basically first. So
yeah, and I also love it as my absolute favorite example of a complicated Redux application.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that it uses Redux under the hood, because you don't actually need to know that.
No, it doesn't pertain to your usage of Gatsby, but if you open up the covers a little bit, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I do things like access the Redux database directly when I'm working on new features and things like that. But that's not normal usage.
No, I'd hope not. Like, that's like the whole point of the project is to abstract that complexity for us and make publishing easy, right? Like,
yeah, right.
Speaking of publishing, at least recently, a big part of your focus has been one, the Gatsby themes, which are very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think make sense on a lot of levels. And then the other side of that is Gatsby MDX. MDX is like Markdown with the ability to drop React components in it. Is that a pretty good short explanation of what MDX is?
Yep. It's close enough.
Yeah. So how would you describe it, though? Like, if you're describing MDX to another developer, how would you describe MDX?
You know, I usually describe it to them based on their context. If they're a design systems team and they work on a design system, I say, hey, this is the way that you can use all your design system components to render your Markdown out. If they are somebody building a documentation site, I say, hey, this can let you actually use React components. And because you can use React components, you get to do things like embed a Go playground inside of your documentation site, right? Yeah. So I try to use sort of the core example for their use case and then say, okay, but it's all MDX and you can do all these things, but this is how it's useful to you and what it can enable you to do.
What is MDX going to change in terms of publishing and creating content on the internet?
I think MDX has a actually pretty strong opportunity to sort of replace Markdown as the default content type, right?
Yeah.
Because it's compatible with Markdown, right? It's the same thing. If you want to write a Markdown file, you can write an MDX file, and it'll be the same thing. You can just change the file extension if you want to, and then it gives you all this power on top, right? It gives you the ability to create your header tags or your code blocks and replace them with like these super powered, dynamically imported React components, right? So I think over time we'll see MDX probably expand into other frameworks as well. I know that there's some work being done on Vue support for MDX.
Mm-hmm.
And it can actually end up replacing Markdown as the default platform for people to build on top of, right? And the people that don't care don't need to. And the people that care are suddenly going to go, oh, wow, I have all of this power now that I didn't have before. I can just write a single React component and it gives me this really powerful code block, right?
Yeah. We think about Markdown, right? And it's just text.
Yep.
And like, you know, that's how we look at it. And that's it's true. It's text. It's data. And I think a lot of times, and I know I personally will take text processing for granted, and then I see something like MDX, and I also see another project, the Unified mm-hmm. project.
Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating, and I hear almost nothing about it. And could you describe Unified as it relates to MDX?
Yeah, so Unified is this basically AST manipulation toolkit, right? If you look at Markdown and you look at approaches like Remark is built on top of Unified, right? if you want to do anything with the Remark, which is the Markdown AST, you write unified plugins effectively. It's the underlying layer between a Markdown AST, an HTML AST, and all of the MDX extensions to those ASTs. So unified is the abstraction, as I would put it, right? It's the AST behind the AST kind of thing.
I mean, it's getting down to the bare essentials of picking apart our text files and doing things with them, manipulating them and doing interesting things with them.
Yeah, for sure.
So as far as that goes, like as far as, you know, like MDX, we get to this point, we have, you know, a supercharged Markdown that we can add dynamic capabilities to it. What examples are your current favorites? Like, where do you send people to show like the power of MDX and what the capabilities can and will be?
So there's a bunch of people building sort of design system sites that are starting to get, so they're actually using MDX and they've been using it for a while. And now they're starting to get to the point where they're like, okay, we have all of this stuff and now what can we do with it? Mm-hmm. So we're still in the very early days, but most of the sites that I send people to are documentation for design systems, because those people felt this need the most, I think, over the last couple of years, where they try to build this documentation and they have all these components and they are like, I don't know how to put these two things together without a lot of work. And now it takes like no work. So yeah, basically design system documentation sites.
Do you have any favorites that are public?
Yeah. So ReachRouter's documentation actually uses Gatsby MDX, okay, which is pretty dope.
Yeah.
And that's a good example. There is some work going on in Carbon to use MDX. There is some work going on at Seeds to use MDX. And I can give some links to you so that people can see it in the show notes. But.
And then you have DocZ too, right? Which is MDX based. So you can, you know, anybody can pick it up and it gives you kind of almost a structure framework type thing to build around.
Yeah, DocZ is really interesting from a Gatsby themes perspective and also mm-hmm. from an MDX perspective. I think that a lot of the work in DocZ itself has already been written inside of Gatsby, right? So there's this sort of DB abstraction inside of DocZ that could just be the Gatsby content mesh data layer, right? And it would sort of allow you to use the entire Gatsby ecosystem if you wanted to extend your documentation with a blog or something like that.
So you could use the plugins and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. You'd use like Gatsby MDX and it would come in a nice little Gatsby theme .z package. And if you wanted anything else, you could use any plugin, right? You could pull in stuff from Airtable, pull in stuff from Paper, pull in whatever you want, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. The entire concept is very exciting to me. I keep literally wanting to rewrite our entire front end using this technology and like leveraging, you know, MDX and Gatsby, and the idea of, you know, a PWA generator is so appealing.
Yeah, I've seen some of those PRs.
Yeah, it's hard like to have restraint and not do the rewrite. I think just in general as a developer.
Yeah, for sure.
ReachRouter is cool too. That's using DocZ or it's using MDX anyway.
That's using Gatsby MDX.
Gatsby MDX. Yeah. And then ReachRouter is what's actually driving Gatsby too. Is that correct?
Yeah. So ReachRouter.
It's Ryan Florence's replaced, project.
Yes, Ryan Florence's project. Ex-maintainer of React Router. Sort of an accessible next generation approach to routing from somebody who has built a lot of routing over the past few years for the React ecosystem.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. It's really nice to see accessibility baked in like that.
I love what he's doing in general, because that's his like mission is to build components and a router and push accessibility as a first concern. And I think that's an amazing banner to be waving that everybody needs to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's pretty important. And I like the work that he's doing over there for sure.
Yeah, it's good stuff. What else are you looking forward to in this coming year? What are you going to learn and focus on? Or are you just going to stick to what you've started?
So I'm definitely going to stick to what I've started. Right now, I think I'm at like 24, 25 blog posts in the last 23 or 24 days.
Yeah, you're on fire.
So we'll see how long that lasts. I'm going to definitely try to get to a month. And if I go beyond that, then call that a success. There's a product that I'm building called Maintainer Systems that is basically tooling and analytics for open source maintainers. So some of these projects like Gatsby have need to find out things like, are the people at my company merging PRs in 2 days and everybody else merging PRs in 14 days? Which I'm definitely not saying Gatsby is, but you sort of need to know those things if you're going to build a company on open source software, right?
So is that maintainer systems then for open source companies like Gatsby or who else would be a good example?
Yeah, so like Docker, for example. Right. I worked there for a couple of years and saw the same problems, things like Kubernetes it would be good for. Etc.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think there's a big need for that kind of thing, and like the cross between, you know, commercial, like we need to make money, and I think open source as a business is strong and something that should be encouraged. But then at the same time, there's, you know, people are then get used to free. So how do you you know, like, cross that divide, and what does open source even mean in terms of business and livelihoods and that sort of thing?
Yeah, and if you look at the things that people are building already today and sort of examples for like the Rust community, right, and their bots and things like that, they apply to all levels of open source maintainership, whether you're just starting a project, you have some success, or you have major success like some of these companies have.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to build tools that work for the larger groups of people and also the individual maintainers or the small groups and sort of give them a bit more leverage.
Yeah, and that's good too, because like that to me would be something that would grow with people as well, right? Like, because you never, like, I don't know that you ever start an open source project and think, yeah, this is it. This is going to be the big thing. it was like you said, you know, we're all just kind of making it up as we go along. And then all of a sudden you hit a good idea and other people are like, wow, that's a really good idea. And they start joining in. And then all of a sudden you are a maintainer.
Right. You are a maintainer today. Congratulations.
Yeah, and the email
issue notifications hit 300.
Yeah, the emails never cease for the expectations for the maintainer,
which
could be a tough position for anybody. So, like, more resources that I think we have to support those folks that are doing this good work, the better. Because, you know, it's like that's actually, you know, like one of the core tenets of Egghead, and one of the things I love is that somebody that's building open source can, like, make content and make money from the content that they produced and augment their documentations with videos. And because it's hard, right? Like the a lot of times the folks that are making open source software and maintaining it don't really want to do like content marketing and sales and all that kind of stuff. So there's a weird, you know, like there's a weird gray zone. And how do you achieve that?
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the reasons I'm really comfortable sort of repping Gatsby. They're very aware of like the mental health issues that come with being an open source maintainer, where you're sort of, if you have a very, very successful project, you do get those people who come in and are just yelling at you, right? For whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very aware of that. And I'm pretty happy with the way that they're approaching sort of supporting the people that are involved in that.
Yeah, I won't shut up about Gatsby. Like, I keep going on. Like, I send emails to our list, and I like to talk about it on the podcast. And, like, I really, truly, like, appreciate what they're doing from top to bottom. Not only, like, in the product that they're making, which is wonderful and I love, but then, like, the general attitude and their approach to community and development and the team that they're building and everything. They really just hit a lot of notes for me. So, like, that's, you know.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like is that they pay sort of the people who write documentation and things like that on the same scale as engineers.
Yeah,
which I believe Egghead does too, right?
Yeah, like it's pretty even keel across the board. Like, we're all just building software, so.
Yeah, so I mean that's amazing, right? Like, documentation is, you don't have a product without documentation.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see those people sort of get what they're due, right?
Yeah, for sure. All right, so where are you writing all these blog posts anyway?
ChristopherBiscardi.com. I usually tweet them out as well if you want to follow me at Chris Biscardi.
Cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me today, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Cheers.
Cheers.